Welcome to Does the Team Think with Arthur Askey, Ted Ray, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who has got the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And here comes a question put to you by no less a person than Mr. Robert Levin.
Do the members of the team ever entertain children? And if so, do they do anything special?
Do the members of the team ever entertain children? And if so, do they do anything special?
I entertain children because I do pantomime. You see, in the bulk of the...
You call that entertainment?
Well, it's a kind of entertainment, and the bulk of the audiences are children. And it's very hard to entertain children. Not like when I first came in the business, because the children in those days were bewildered with the pantomime. The principal girl would come on and go, ah, now they shall get them off.
He's not talking about
it's not as easy these days to entertain children. In my Masonic days, I used to do the occasional children's party. You mustn't play down to the children. I never did. They're always bigger than me.
Cyril Fletcher.
Well, I'm the president of the Pantomime Society, which is rather splendid, isn't it? And on one occasion, my daughter was aged two and a half, and she came up onto the stage with the other children to do the pantomime song with me. And, of course, she'd heard her mother writing it, so she knew it word for word. And so I said to her, I'm dressed as a woman, of course. I'm the dame in the pantomime. I said, this little girl seems to know the words of this song very well, and you've never seen me before, have you? And she said,
no, Daddy.
Mr. Fletcher throwing his voice. We didn't throw it far enough, unfortunately.
Jimmy Edwards. Jimmy, would you like to throw your voice, please?
I was in a pantomime once in Brighton at the Hippodrome there.
I saw it.
Bertie Hare and I were playing...
That's what closed it.
I've closed a lot of theatres in my time.
Yeah, but not Bertie... while you were working.
Bertie Hare and I were playing the robbers, you see. And I was the kindy robber, and there's this awful scene where we have to have a kind of a fight. We fall out, and I get a sword stuck through me, and I go right down to the microphone and start the dying bit, you know. Oh, 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 I think I'm going to die. And one afternoon, a voice from the back shouted, well, get on with it, Jim!
That was me.
No.
Ted Ray.
The job.
Well, I think the kids nowadays are far too grown up to enjoy pantomime, you know?
It isn't true.
It is true because, you see, no sooner are the kids off the pot than they're on it again. I think that, all the games, I'm thinking specifically of games in the house, you know, Christmas parties, not pantomimes, but... I mean, who can afford to play Postman's Knock at 8.5p a letter?
8 letters for Mr. Jones at 8.5p?
It's like the kid who was asked to this children's party, and he was a nasty little boy, and he used to swear a lot. Mm. And his mother said to him, now, you can go to this party, but I've told Mrs. Smith that if you swear, she's to clip you around the ear and send you home, and I'll give you the hiding of your life. She said, I'll be good, Mammy. So off he went. 10 minutes later, he was back, so his mother got hold of him by the scruff of the neck and bashed him about the head and said, what was it you said at Mrs. Smith's party? He said, I didn't say anything. The bloody party's not till tomorrow.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, a lot of people get their jokes late in life when they become too old to appear in front of the public.
Don't you look at me.
Arthur, you will never be as old as you look. I don't understand it either, Arthur, because you're so young.
I am known as the Donny Osmond of the geriatrics.
Well, I don't have to sit on one.
But, we had to change his nappies before the show.
This fellow, you see, got the job. It was an old comic, and he couldn't think of any more jokes. So he got a job as Father Christmas. And a little child came in, and he was all by himself, and the Father Christmas said, well, sonny, would you like a little ride upon the rocking horse, eh? Mm-hmm. And he picked up the little boy, put him on the rocking horse, and he said, da-di-di-da-di-di-da. And this kid was furious because it was Lester Piggott.
Thank you, team, and thank you, Mr. Levin. Thank you very much, Mr. Levin. And now, team, you're going to hear a question put to you by Miss Natalie Fearon.
Does the team think edible bags would help solve the litter problem?
Does the team think that edible bags would help to solve the litter problem? Who wants to start?
Well, you're fond of a nibble.
I tell you what, the question's funnier than any of the answers are going to be.
Keep London clean, eat a pigeon a day.
It'd be very funny, wouldn't it, to get 14 pound of potatoes and undo them and then eat the sack. But I think it's a brilliant idea because things that are supposed to be disposable today, they call a thing disposable. You know, you can get disposable everything.
I know you
except
can.
Except that you can't get rid of it.
But when Jimmy was in America, he will confirm this, that they were giving out handbills saying, keep New York tidy. And the people read these things and folded them up and threw them away.
There used to be an act on the halls who used to come on, and he used to eat all his clothes, starting with a straw hat. And that, what was his name?
Chaz Chase. Yeah.
And he had everything was made, I think, round the neck anyway, was made of rice paper,
right.
Which you can eat.
That's quite yes. Right.
And you know the Morning Star, the communist newspaper.
Well, take that as red.
That's the editor. Well, now, that is printed on rice paper, so the people can dispose of the rubbish that's in it.
And furthermore, you know what happens when you eat rice. You get so constipated it isn't true.
This lady is onto something. I'm not sure what it is, but it's obviously very uncomfortable. She's onto something. The packaging materials today are the curse of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't expect Miss Fearon to eat the bottle.
I have just come back from a lovely, lovely place called Honolulu. Golden sea of blue and Asia and all the rest of it in the sky, but the roads and the beaches are full of litter and garbage. And it's the most amazing thing. Even people even take a glass of orange juice or something down onto the beach in a plastic cup. Throw it down into the water.
Yeah.
Well, the sea won't dispose of that. The sea is tired already, exhausted of disposing of sunken ships and things. So we should start is an anti-litter campaign.
I've said that to the pigs for
and
years.
Instead of having these stupid charity walks, have charity litter pickups. Right?
Yeah.
People are trying, they are trying their best. There are people taking notice of this anti-litter business.
My great bete noir is what I call wrapped butter. You know those little bits of paper?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And
yeah.
You never know where to put it. You put it in the ashtray and then you stub a cigarette out and the whole place is fumigated. It's horrible.
Who the hell's the deft fellow with tiny fingers who gets it in there? I mean, they wrap it up so neatly. I can't wrap up a huge parcel with six pairs of riding boots in it, leave alone a little tiny square of butter. You'd have to put your glasses on to start with.
Well, what about those cardboard cartons that they sell this fried chicken in? Now, the cartons taste better than the chicken, I'll tell you that.
Well, I've never eaten one.
I saw someone write in to answer their questions, and they said, as a matter of etiquette, should chicken be eaten with the fingers? And the answer was no, the fingers should be always eaten separately.
Thank you, team, and thank you very much, Miss Natalie Fearon. Thank you.
And now Mrs. Mary Hall takes her place on my right-hand side, and she has this question to put to you, team. Listen carefully. Here it comes.
Does the team think it would be an easy task for the nursing staff to look after them if they were ill in hospital?
Does the team think it would be an easy task for the nursing staff to look after them if they were ill in hospital?
Were you a nurse, Mrs. Hall?
I have done a little bit of nursing.
You've done a little bit of nursing. Oh, well, you know what it's all about.
You weren't in my place because I never saw you bring in the bedpan.
Oh, as a matter of fact, I went to see Ted when he was in hospital, bless
you
him.
Did, bless
and,
you.
And he must have been a marvellous patient because when I got there, all the nurses were falling about the place. I hadn't seen him without his clothes on either.
No, as a matter of fact, and if you want the truth, these nurses, of course, are absolutely superb.
Fantastic.
There's nothing like...
They're angels. They keep taking off.
And there were four of them. I absolutely refused to use this receptacle in bed.
What?
I was only kidding. I refused. I said, no, I won't do it. And they said, well, Mr. A, we will have to carry you. And the four of them took me along the passage, and one of the sisters passed and said, I see the motion is carried.
Thank you. Well, I had a long stint in hospital, Ted. I had 8 weeks in St. George's, and they were absolutely marvellous. And like you, I refused to use that thing, you know.
Are you
I
talking
didn't want of, to, I didn't talking want to incommode them.
I can't understand why your minds immediately, because we're talking about hospitals, go to bedpans. There are other more interesting things in hospitals.
Well, I was just looking at you, Jim.
What I think is so extraordinary, you see, this nurse, this very beautiful nurse, comes in, do you see, and she turns you over and washes one side and turns you over and washes the other side, and then she shaves at the most extraordinary places, and then you say to her, why did you bother to knock?
Well, one of the nurses was a big coloured girl, and her name was Hector. Now, believe it or not, this is true. Honestly, may I never play the Hippodrome Dewsbury again?
May you never.
She was enormous, this girl, Hector, and she came over to me and she said, give it to me now, boy. And I said, I beg your pardon. So she grabbed my hand and she put her thumb on my pulse. And there was a long silence. And I said, am I all right? She said, well, I don't know. You're either dead or my watch has stopped.
I must tell you a story about Jimmy, because he's too modest to tell this story. But he fell off his horse and dislocated his shoulder.
His what?
His shoulder.
Oh, his shoulder, yeah.
And they took him to the hospital and put him on the bed, and they were all having a go trying to fix it. And he was shouting and screaming and yelling, you know, and the doctor eventually stopped him. He said, listen, you big fella like you making all this noise, there's a woman in the next ward, she's just had a baby, and we haven't heard a peep out of her. And he said, no, but you try pushing it back.
Especially if it had a moustache like Jim's.
As a matter of fact, it's rather amazing. Mr. Chairman is pointing out to me the fact that I have been the one that hasn't been an opportunity to answer this lady's question.
Yes.
Now he
in
has.
A lucid manner.
Yeah.
And she means it quite seriously, because I am a very bad patient. I'm irascible, short-tempered, and incontinent.
Of course, you're a Presbyterian.
And as long as I get my...
That's silly.
Anything goes.
As long as I get my supply of beer, I'm all right. But I was in hospital once for a period of time during the war, actually, in North Africa.
Yes.
I had a complaint, which was quite common at the time.
Oh, yes.
Called...
Don't tell us.
No.
Don't tell us.
I've got a cure for it now, Jim.
No. I went yellow in the eyes. It was
You're pre-jaundiced.
No, that's right. It was jaundice. That's
jaundice,
right.
Yes.
I had jaundice, and there's no cure for jaundice. You just lie in bed.
Would you like to see a photograph taken of me while I was in hospital? Yeah. I'm in the end bed.
But the end bed's empty.
Is it? I must have got out for a minute.
After that old joke, we'll turn our attention to Mrs. Hall. If you had the choice, and you'll probably say none of them, which of these gentlemen would you prefer to nurse back to robust health?
Jimmy would want a bottle, and the kind of bottle I would give him would probably not be the kind he would want.
I could soon fill it with the right ingredients, darling.
Ted would do a bit of fiddling and fooling, so you'd have to put him in a straitjacket.
Jim, what sort of ailment would you like to have if you wanted to have a comfortable time in hospital?
Alcoholism.
Actually, I was very lucky during another time during the war. I was in hospital with a burn. I had a burnt face, actually. Mm. And the treatment for burns is quite simple. You fed them well. That's part of McIndoe's theory, was keep their morale up, give them beer and plenty of food. That was the happiest time of my life.
How did you get your face burned, Jim? I think I'll go there.
Arthur, what sort of ailment would you like to have?
Well, I don't know. All I get is a chafe behind stepping off pavements.
Cyril?
Well, my sister dropped me out of a pram when I was small, and I think that made me a comedian, quite possibly.
It was only last week, wasn't it?
I tell you what, the worst thing you can have is a broken arm and the itch at the same time.
I tell you another moment that I particularly remember about the hospital and the services was the woman in charge, the matron, I suppose she would be called.
No, the sister, rather, no matron.
Sister, or whoever's sister. Rather stern lady with one of those that's funny it. White things on her head.
Gertrude Stern.
She'd been through a tunnel, yes. You know.
Yes.
And she used to come and say, the Wing Commander's coming round today. Now, you're going to be reading a book. You're going to be in the bath. You're going to... She'd set up this whole show for this Wing Commander. And I was always in the bath. I said, can I read a book in the bath? Well, you can read it until he arrives and you have to put it away.
Did you go all crinkly?
Well, my toes did.
Jim, did they ever rub your back with alcohol?
Oh, never my back.
No, he broke his neck.
Trying to lick it off.
Thank you, team, and thank you very much, Mrs. Mary Hall. Thank you.
Oh, you know we've got to get out of that.
Yeah.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest. From so many successful shows on stage, films and television, that splendid actress with a special flair for comedy, Thora Hird.
Speak to me, Thora. Speak to me once.
I used to play that for my mother.
No, I want you to go serious now.
All right,
it's a very
let's all go
question.
Serious. Well,
okay. Serious we've been question. Pretty serious up to now.
With what favourite authors does the team like to settle down in front of the fire?
With what favourite authors do the team most like to settle down in front of the fire? Have any members of the team settled down with Arthur Askey's autobiography?
Has he written one?
Yes.
Tell me, Arthur, I've been away.
It's a bestseller.
Oh, I'm sure
it's
it is.
Very good indeed.
It sold 10,000 copies and he can show you every one.
It was written by a big-hearted author.
What's it? Oh.
It's called Before Your Very Eyes. I don't know what to call it. So many.
Is there any member of this panel who hasn't written an autobiography?
Yes, I haven't.
Oh, Cyril hasn't.
Nothing's ever happened to me. Well,
I want to have a little word with Thora.
Yeah,
Thora,
you and Thora,
have you, in fact, written your autobiography?
Yes, I have.
What are you calling it, Thor?
Well, I've called it Seen and Heard.
Oh, very good. That's a good title.
Nice. But I'd like to stress, if I may, Mr. Chairman, it's not a biography, it's an autobiography, because I've written every word of it in longhand.
And I did myself.
Did you?
Yeah.
But just going back a minute, a sec, when you were on about the hospitals, because I thought you're all so clever and I like listening to you, but this is absolutely true. That happened to me after Car Smash Ted. I was in a hospital and the face was 13 and a half inches wide. I'll condense this. And a lady came in to bring her niece in who was going to have her appendix out. And she'd all the brown bags of fruit and all this. And she kept saying to the girl when she got in the bed, "You can't eat them now, you know, Edna. They'll not let you have them now. You can have them tomorrow when it's all done, love, and don't be nervous." And she kept saying, "Don't be nervous," to the girl who wasn't nervous, so much that the girl was nervous. So the bell went and everybody had to go out. And this is perfectly true. And the woman is going out from the bed and she does a double take and she sees me in the bed with the 30... like an avid dinner trodden on my face, won't you see? So I've gone through the rest. And she says, "Oh, it's Ithora." "Oh," she said, "what a sight. Oh, I say, what a sample." And she came right down to me here, all here, and she said, "I say, what a good job you were never good looking before."
In not eating that fruit before the operation, because I remember in the next hospital to where I was, I heard that a lady brought in someone a melon and a cauliflower. And that's a silly thing to bring, a melon and a cauliflower. And she had them before the operation, and she's been melancholy ever since.
Steve, I want to ask Thora whether Thora has any suggestions. What sort of authors do you think they should settle down in front of the fire with?
Oh, I don't think it should be authors, knowing this lot.
Will
and
you
I know
ask
them
the
all
question?
Very well. I think it should be authoresses. Do you see? Because, I mean, they're perhaps getting a bit past it with respect.
Yes, with respect, yes.
But they were
I'm
all
past
good
it without
lads.
Respect.
They were good lads at it. You know, and a little passing night, a little mellow, beautiful. You know, it's like working twice nightly when you're young, and it's one night leaving it when you get older, you know. You just do the performance well.
What about matinees?
Beg pardon?
What about matinees?
Oh, you forget those, Mr. Fletcher.
Well, people sometimes try to pass away the time by reading, you know. And I know that Thora has written this book because I know by the spelling. You see, Thora has a weakness in spelling.
True.
I know. True. And I saw an advance copy of this book, and she said, "My honour was at stake." He you see? And she put S-T-E-A-K.
Now, that's a lie. Mr. Ray, unfortunately, my honour has never been at stake, and I've got as old as I am now, and I don't suppose it ever will be.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Cora Hurst.
Thank you. Mr. John White, welcome to the programme.
Success is sometimes attributed to being in the right place at the right time and your face fitting. Has this ever happened to members of the team?
Success is sometimes attributed to being in the right place at the right time and your face fitting. Has this ever happened to members of the team?
Well, none of them are successful, so how could it?
Don't be ridiculous, Jimmy. I'm one of the all-time greats, there's no doubt about that. And it was all through bandwagon, and I happened to be in the right place at the right time.
What did your face fit?
Well, no, he said, you see, if it had been television, I'd have probably lost the job.
I went for a job as a haberdasher.
Oh, yeah.
I was a man of very few ties. And I lost the job because the man took one look at me, looked at the other fellow and says, not you, son. He says, you've got a funny face. That was me. And I never got the job.
You think you're handsome, though, Ted. Now, why do you tell that story? Because you said to me once, you know, Arthur, you've got a great advantage. The minute you appear in front of the public, when you get out of the wings, the audience start laughing. He said, now, when I come on, I'm a good-looking fella, and I've got to work at them. He said that to me. I meant it.
Mr. White, you asked this question, I assume, because do you want advice, or has this happened to you?
I was on holiday in Scotland not so very long ago. Beautiful part of the country.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And I parked in a very desolate spot.
Quite right.
Quite, shut up, Jim.
And I opened the car door, and on the ground was a pound note.
A what?
A pound note.
In Scotland?
Yes, in Scotland.
Now, what did he got under his kilt?
I maintain I was in the right place at the right time.
But your face didn't fit.
No, but when I was a teenager, I went to a seaside resort. There's a sort of a photographic setup there.
Yes, it would.
Oh, you're one of those fellas taking the pictures.
And you could put your head in a hole.
Yes.
Could you?
Underneath you was a sort of a
you could be an ostrich.
And I put my face in this hole.
And they threw tennis balls at it.
Let Mr. White finish, team.
And I put my face...
Nobody puts his head through that hole, he will finish.
So I put my head through this hole and had my photograph taken.
Did you? And well, that's a funny place to have a camera.
Now, as I came out, a chap said, oh, that looks quite good. Have you ever thought of being a film extra?
A film extra?
Yes.
Now, wait.
I wonder what would have happened if I had said yes. You could have said I would have been in the right place at the right time and my face fitted, and I did well as a result.
But it didn't happen!
No, but I didn't...
What are you talking about? He's wondering what would have happened if his face had been in the right hole at the right time.
No, the reason it didn't happen is because a war came along.
Ah! That ruined my
war came along?
Yes.
How old were you?
I'm not going to tell you.
No, I'm may I apologise, Mr. White, for the rest of this rabble that I'm associated with. I was walking along the other day and I saw a fella sketching me and I went up to him and I said, ah, I see you're an artist. He said, no, I design door knockers.
Thank you very much.
Had he been a real artist, he'd have designed real knockers, wouldn't he? Or painted them.
No,
oh, thank you, Mr. White.
Mr. White has disappeared.
We have a question now from Mrs. Marjorie Dryland. Mrs. Dryland, welcome to the programme. What's your question, please?
If members of the team had to take over the running of their homes, what domestic chore would they drop as being completely unnecessary anyway?
If members of the team had to take over the running of their homes, what domestic chore would they drop as being completely unnecessary anyway?
I think that washing up is a complete waste of time. A set of paper plates and a rubber.
The chore that I shall stop doing is I shall no longer polish my virginals. You know what a virginal is, of course. That's a piano that's never been played.
Is that so? Is that so?
Well, I have trouble with my pelmets. Being on the short side, I can't reach them. One thing I do hate is dusting. Probably because when I was younger, I was nearly run over by a Hoover.
I must confess that my wife treats me a bit harshly. In fact, I will confess that I'm henpecked. I'm tied to her apron strings, which makes it a bit awkward when she's going somewhere. What do you mean, all?
The one household duty that I would dispense with is changing the straw.
Changing the straw?
Oh, yes, that's right. The guy went down to see Jimmy on his farm and he opened the door with a hay rake.
Yes.
A hay fork, didn't you? Yes, I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm making the beds.
As a matter of fact, these days, straw has given way now to wood shavings, you know.
So I believe, yes, shavings, yes.
They're much cheaper.
Say goodbye, Mr. Chips.
The ones I feel sorry for are the husbands of the Blackpool landladies who, at the beginning of the season, they send their husbands down into the basement of the house to do the cooking and the washing up, and they don't surface until the end of the season. They come up white-faced, gasping for breath, right. You know.
They've all got an enamel bucket, it's true, an enamel bucket and about 100 weight of potatoes, and they never see daylight.
I always think that a husband is a man who, after emptying an ashtray, managed to look as if he's just finished cleaning the whole house.
I stayed with this woman. She had a nice little house. She had two up and two down. And the doctor said that was a novelty.
And you know, Arthur, these landladies used to have books, you know, recommendations. I don't know whether you ever remember those books. You, at the end of the week, would you write something in my book, Mr. A, you know? And I followed somebody in and it said, quote the raven.
Mrs. Dryland, if you had these four gentlemen for some particular reason or another, whatever it was, heaven forbid is right, staying in your house, what jobs would you give them? And which jobs do you think they would do best?
Absolutely nothing at all.
Thank you, team, very much. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Arthur Askey, Ted Wren, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest, Cora Hurst. This is McDonald Henry saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.